This program is a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and is brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guests, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.
97 Gold presents Your Money with Fay Bagby. Sound advice to help your money grow. Now, here's Fay Bagby on 97 Gold.
Good morning.
Well, good morning, Fay. How are you?
I'm wonderful. It's fall.
Well, it is. The fallness is in the air, and the holiday season is upon us.
I knew you'd be thinking about holidays already. You can't resist, can you?
I cannot. You got the Halloween candy in the stores right now, and I've started to see a little Christmas candy here and there. No lie.
Well, you know, some stores have already taken it and put their Christmas trees out. What is going on?
Are you serious? I haven't seen the trees.
I think they're so desperate, it's been so long, that they're saying, let's get started early. Maybe people will start shopping for Christmas, you know,
in
September, October, you know?
Well, the first time I see a Christmas tree in a store, you know I'm going to start Christmas shopping immediately. So it will work on me.
Yeah, you're going to say, let's get the list out.
Yeah.
Let's get started. Oh, my gosh. Well, it'll all be here before we know it. You know that.
I know it. It's what? What are we? Month? Well, no, we're less than a month because we're already into October.
We're in October.
And so it's like, my goodness, what happened to the whole year? It seems like we were just talking about the holidays coming up from last year, and here we are doing it again. I don't know what happened this year. Time seems to be going much faster.
You know, they say the older we get, I hate to say that, the older we get, the faster it goes. But that's surely not right.
Well, I wouldn't think so. It doesn't make any sense. I've heard it my whole life, and I thought, you old people are crazy. And now...
That's what I think, too.
I see what they're talking about.
And I was going to tell you, we had some good reports this week.
Really?
I had some people say that they loved our show.
Really?
Yes. And one gentleman asked me, he said, I know it's scripted. I said, you won't believe it. It is not scripted.
No.
I said, it is far from being scripted.
It's all completely made up on the spot.
That's right. It's just whatever goes, goes.
We don't even talk about it ahead of time.
No, we never discuss it. It's just we do it, and that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
And the topics just come and go.
Yeah, it could be anything.
That's right. Oh, my gosh.
Wow. Well, that's fantastic. That's good to know. It's good to hear.
I thought it was great to know because every once in a while somebody will say, I love your show. You know, we've been listening to you for a long time. And this gentleman said him and his brothers all listened to us on Saturday morning.
Well, thank them so much. That is awesome.
Yes. And... that are potential new clients, too.
Really?
They've been listening to us for a long, long time.
And so they've been listening, and then they've been hearing all the things that you've been talking about, and so now right. They're at a point where they want to get into, like, life settlements and things?
That's right. I'm going to meet with them this next week.
Wow.
And also, this gentleman tells me they own a cherry orchard up in Washington.
Ooh.
And he told me, they have a patent on a tree. I did not know you could patent a tree.
I didn't know that either. Is it a...
Well, now we know. You can actually get a patent on a tree. It's a certain kind of cherry, and they have patented that cherry. As long as the tree is not moved, the patent will hold. How about that?
Really? So,
yes.
So wait, the patent is on the tree or the cherry that comes from the tree?
The cherry is on that particular tree. So it's a certain kind of cherry that grows on that tree, and they have patented that tree and that cherry, okay? That kind of cherry.
Fascinating. I'm like you. I had no idea you could even do that.
I did not know you could patent a tree.
Wow.
I knew you could patent almost anything, but I didn't know about trees.
Wow.
I'd never heard of it.
Is it like some kind of a hybrid cherry or something? or
I did not ask him. I'm sure it is.
See now,
they,
I'm poking holes in the story.
Yeah, they developed it. So,
really,
him and his brothers.
Wow,
so
how
I found
neat!
That interesting.
That is very interesting. Golly, you see, we already learned something today.
We should learn something every day.
Well, we should. That's true.
I mean, if we don't, there's something going on.
There's something going on, all right.
There's something going on, all right, right.
I got different words for it, but that's another show.
That's right. We won't talk about that.
No.
Oh, my gosh.
This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com. Go to our website, look us up. It gives a lot of information, tells you how much people are making, how long it took them to make it, what percentage it was. So it's just got a lot of good information.
It really does. And you find out, you know, when you talk to people, especially new investors that come over, you hear from a lot of people that say, you know, hey, you talk about the website all the time. And we actually went there and they really do come in with a lot more knowledge, I guess, when they're first starting out, just by going to the site, finding out what people have made, finding out about, you know, other people's experiences and testimonials and things like that, just really understanding how the whole program works. So it really does help inform people so that they know, like, the questions to ask and things like that. You get a lot of great feedback from it, don't you?
That's exactly right. And, you know, people are always sending me things, you know, they want to know about us. And they, I think they've already been to the website, so they already know a lot about us.
Yeah.
You know, they know what life settlements are because they've been listening a long time. And then they know what the percentages are and what it's making. And what it's made over the years. And I think that's really important.
It is. It is, because especially when we're talking about, you know, investing, the whole point in investing is not just for something to do or to kill some time. We're talking about wealth management. We're talking about growing your portfolio. And when you're talking about that much money and something is as important as that can go away literally overnight, which we've seen before, you want to make very well-informed decisions. And there's not a lot of other types of investments where you can have that much information going in, which is probably one of the greatest parts of a life settlement, is that you know what you're going to make, right? You know basically when you're going to make it, give or take.
That's right. And if you saw the stock market this week, you know, it had an ulcer a couple of times and just dropped 300 points.
Yeah.
And there was a, and I cannot remember the guru's name that was on this week. He said he was in 100% cash.
Really?
I mean, this is a guy that had millions in the stock market. He said, no, he said, I'm in cash now. So that tells you something when people that have that kind of money suddenly go to cash.
What does that mean?
That means he's not sure what's going to happen.
Oh.
It's the uncertainty. He wants to see what's going to happen before he's going to risk his money is what it amounts to. He said, I'm not going to risk my money right now. I'm in cash. That's what that tells you.
So he's starting to kind of get, you know, that that uneasy feeling.
He's uneasy and he's nervous.
Mm-hmm. Does he have reason to be nervous? I know anybody, you know, anything can happen at any time. We know that. But is there any kind of a, because I know there's been a buzz once in a while that we talk about where people will say something is going to happen by the end of the year. Is that still out there or is this having?
I think part of it is these new bills they're trying to pass, these $1 trillion they're trying to spend. That's got people worried.
Yeah.
And then I talked to you the other day about this $600. If you have more than $600 in the bank, they're going the Biden administration wants to monitor your accounts. I mean, this is like, you know, from another country, let's put it that way. This is what people used to do. They had to know everything about you, even listening to you. I'm not going that far. I'm not a conspiracy theorist today. I'm just saying they want everything about you. And it's not right for them to be looking at your bank account. You're paying your taxes. You're doing what's right. I just can't imagine. You know, the preset deal was $10,000. you know, if you have to report anything that you've done over $10,000, cash especially. And they do check people that put $3,000 cash in or $5,000. I know that's true. But something like this, where they're going to monitor everybody's bank accounts, is just ludicrous.
What are they monitoring for?
Well, they say they want to be sure we're paying our taxes, and they want to watch our accounts, and they want to hire 87,000 or something, some ridiculous amount of IRS agents just to monitor you and I and everybody else.
Really? I think when you mentioned
it, keep up with the news.
I do. I kind of rely on you for this.
Oh my gosh! I mean, this is happening right before you.
Yeah, it's kind of scary.
It is very scary to me as an American citizen that if the poorest people of all, if they've got $600. They're going to be monitoring you if this passes.
Okay, so it hasn't
everybody
passed.
Everybody should be writing, again, write their congressman, write their senator, write everybody in Washington and tell them, you know, it's un-American, it's ludicrous, it's crazy, and to stop it.
So this is one of the things that people hear about that makes them nervous. Are there other things going on as well? Like, are they like unsure? I know you mentioned, you know, potential spending bills, things like that. And we all know that really anything can affect any kind of investment. You know, let me back up. Those things typically affect the stock market. I shouldn't say any investment because a life settlement.
If they raise everybody's taxes,
yeah,
that's going to affect it.
Yeah.
And like you say, if they pass this $3.5 trillion bill, we will never be out of debt. We may be in debt forever.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Goodness gracious.
So it's making people nervous.
Mm-hmm.
And you saw how nervous they were yesterday when it dropped 300 points.
Yeah. Yeah. My goodness.
So, you know, one thing about it, come whatever may, if you've got a life settlement, it's with an insurance company. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have anything with the stock market. It doesn't have anything to do with mutual funds. It doesn't have anything to do with whether you've got a stopgap on your account. And sometimes people are investing in things, and it can go all the way down. So if you've got a stopgap, at least it'll stop it and it'll sell it at that point and save your money for you. If you don't, just whatever happens, happens.
Yeah.
It depends how brave you are. You know,
brave is a good word for it.
I know, I'm saying that a little bit this morning, brave. It's like everything else in life. Are you a conservative person? If everything goes to heck in a handbasket, where do you want to be with all your investments? Do you want to say, well, I've got a life insurance policy, I'm not worried, whatever they do over here, it's not going to affect me? Are you saying, oh, my gosh, I'm in the stock market, and it's just crashed. What the heck am I going to do?
Yeah.
I talked to somebody this week that said they had a Forex account, okay? And you can trade Forex, you know, on your computers, what you do. I don't know if you trade in that or anything. He was going along. He had a stop gap where it would sell if it got to a certain point. But he and some of his family decided to remove the stopgap. He lost $500,000.
Whoa.
He said it's taken years to recover.
Wow.
And, you know, you've got to have some safety features. You know, if you have no safety features and anything goes wrong, you're going to be starting over. And you know, most of us could not do that. Do you want to start over 60, 70 years old?
Lord, no.
My gosh.
I couldn't even imagine.
No, it would just be a horrifying thing. You go tell your children, I've just lost all of our money?
You know, that would be a tough conversation to have. You go to your spouse and say, hey, remember how we were going to go travel the world next year for retirement? Guess what? We're never retiring. How do you do
that?
That's
right. We will be working forever, and that's not going to go over real well.
Yeah.
Or if you've managed your money well, you know, we have people that have been in CDs all their life. I've got farmers that were in cash and savings accounts. And that was even more conservative. And they came to us after all these years. One guy had gotten a divorce. I cannot imagine a farmer getting a divorce. I hate to say that. But, you know, they always seem like they work hand in hand, glove to glove, you know?
Yeah.
That they're tight and they're a loving couple usually. But, you know, what do I know? What do I know? I mean, yeah. I mean, what could I say? Anyway, when they get a divorce, then again, all that money you've made together, you've only got half of it, folks.
Yeah.
Half of it is gone.
Man.
So all kinds of things can happen. I have a client that his wife has gotten a divorce, and he came in this week, and he said, Faye, I don't even know how to do all this. He said, all the codes were in my wife's name. She handled all the investments. What do I do?
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, and we had to get her name off all the accounts before he could do anything with his account.
Oh, wow.
The codes were in her name, not his. And, you know, the guy was just beside himself.
Wow.
So, you know, you have to always have a backup. I tell people, always have a backup plan.
You know,
and don't just have one person on that account is what I'm trying to tell you.
You've touched on it once in a while, but it's been a little bit since we've talked about it. But do you have a lot of people that come in and I guess invest as a couple, like together? I know sometimes
most people do. Most of them, they have a his and her IRA. Hmm. If the wife doesn't work, we've just got his IRA, but we always make her the beneficiary. If you get a divorce, half of that IRA is going away, okay? Just tell you.
That's it.
We've had two or three divorces that we've been involved in with clients, and when they come in and say, okay, Faye, let's pick this many policies to give to her in the divorce.
Wow, that's a tough conversation to have.
It is a tough conversation. We had one policy, I'll never forget this. I said, well, do you want to give her the short term or the long term? He said, let's give her the longest term you've got. And, you know, we did, and the dadgum thing matured.
Are you serious?
So she came out on top anyway.
Oh.
Yeah, she came out all right in that deal. But, you know, people should always plan ahead. You've got to have a backup plan. Don't just have one person handling your account, because if something goes wrong, we can't move your money. We can't talk to them about your money until we get that person off your account.
So it's really important to make sure that all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed to make sure everything is set up right.
That's right. Be sure you've got it set up where both people can get to that account.
You know, I'm wondering right now, as you say this, I wonder, because it's kind of a pretty big reality check. I wonder how many people right now are saying, my goodness, you know, it's been years since, you know, we've reassessed anything. I wonder if I should go back and do that just to kind of make sure that everything is the way it should be, just in case.
You should always check, you know, who your beneficiaries are. Do you have a primary? Do you have a contingent beneficiary? How much have you set out for each person? And if things change your beneficiaries. You know, be on top of it. I've had people say that someone passed away. Say, that's not who I wanted to get my things. That's not who I wanted to inherit. I said, well, you didn't ever change it. And they're going to inherit. There isn't anything we can do about it.
Yeah.
You know? And so people should bring things up to date, keep them up to date. You know, if things change, change your beneficiary, change your percentage, you know. Stay on top of your estate if you want it to work for you, is what I'm trying to say. And, of course, if you've got life settlements, you know what you're going to make, you know it's set in stone, your contract tells you what you're going to make, what your percentage is, if it goes over what it's going to cost you, we give you every fact before you do it, always in writing. You know that the bank handles your money, the bank gets the check and then puts it in your account. And that's the safest way to do business. It's not like in the stock market where the broker has control of your money and calls the shots and makes your investments. And if, unless you're really involved in it, you don't always know what you have in your account. And with us, everybody knows what's in their account, what type of cancer it is going in, and how many months it is. And they, you know, they've got all the facts on it. And that's what you should do with your money, is make sure you know where it's at, how safe is it. You know, right now it's kind of, things are kind of uncertain in the world. So I would be sure that my money was grounded. That's just what I think.
I would imagine probably more and more people may be starting to call in the next couple of weeks or months or near future anyway, because so many things are so uncertain, and it's probably going to keep being, I guess, stirred up for a while. And so there may be other things that come up on the horizon that we don't even know about yet to create more uncertainty. It might be one of those things where people start, you know, kind of really rethinking things. Even if they don't maybe take action right away, they might be looking at other alternatives. It's like, you know, hey, we don't want to get, you know, because with every day that goes by and people get closer and closer to retirement, that's when you really want to make sure that, you know, you're not, you know, vulnerable to uncontrollable worldly events that could affect your portfolio, because that affects everything.
Remember, this is your retirement savings. Sometimes people are just working hard every day. They don't think about it. They don't look at it. But remember, when you get ready to retire, you want to be sure it's there, every dime of it, and that you can do something with it at retirement. People are retiring right now a lot earlier. We've had people this last year retiring at 59 and 60. That's really young.
Wow.
I mean, you've got a long way to go. I mean, what are you going to do with the rest of your life? Are you going to play golf just every day the rest of your life? Or are you going to go do something else fun? Or are you going to go back to work in 6 months? A lot of people do.
Yeah.
But it's real important to know that when you get ready to ring the bell and leave, okay, how much is there? How much can I invest? You know,
yeah.
We've got a lot of people that took out annuities with us 11 years ago. It's hard to believe. And those annuities have ran out. And I've been getting calls this week, Faye, what can you do? My annuities ran out. Let's do something. And so I've redone annuities for 3 or 4 people this week that have had those annuities. They've made money. They've increased their net worth. But now they want to do another one. So, you know, we're going to change them over and do something different. So, but those are conservative. That's as conservative as you can get.
It almost sounds like, stop me because I've never really kind of compared it before like this, but in listening to, you know, the different avenues for investments between stock markets, life settlements, annuities, things like that, it almost sounds like the stock market type of investing is reactive, whereas like a life settlement is more proactive. By that, I mean, on the stock market, you usually find out, like you said earlier, what investments you've got, where your broker put your stuff, so to speak. You find out, like, on the back end. Okay, here's what happened already. You've gained, you've lost, whatever the case is. But with a life settlement, you know going in, and it's just like, hey, I know what I'm going to make. I know when I'm going to make it. I know, you know, if this happens, if it goes over, I know what that's going to be. It's more like you kind of set it going in on the front. You have that knowledge on the front end as opposed to on the back end with the life settlement. Is
that's
that accurate?
Right. That's right. So you know what's going to happen. You know how it's going to work. You know what you're going to make. And you know about when you're going to make it, which I think is a good, safe way to do it. You know, everybody has a different thought on this. You know, a lot of people go and invest in oil and gas wells. That's very speculative. Now, they may make a lot of money. I don't know. But I know I just heard of a case where these people invested with this company, and they weren't experts at it.
Mm.
So that company's been fined, you know, millions of dollars because they told all these investors they were going to make all this money and the wells were going to have 400 barrels a day.
Whoa.
It turned out they had 40 barrels a day.
Ooh.
I mean, that's going to be a big difference in your checkbook, let me tell you.
Man, that's
so,
a hit.
Everybody has a different way of investing. And I'm not saying that they're not right or wrong. I'm just saying everybody has to choose. And you have to say, okay, I want to be conservative, or, you know, it's like Vegas. I'm just going to, you know, throw the dice.
Yeah.
And but most people I know are pretty conservative. And so this is a good investment for conservative people, because it's in a life insurance policy. You know what's going to happen. You know you're going to get paid. You know these people are going to pass away. They may come in early, may come in on time, and some of them may come in late. But you always get that principal interest back.
Well, you know, and then as you think about it, I mean, to kind of make it as easy as possible, life insurance companies, when a policy matures, they pay out. They don't reduce the rates. They don't reduce, you know, how much
the amount you're going to get.
Exactly.
Right.
So
that's exactly right. They're not going to say, well, today we'll just give you 50%, or today we'll give you 75%. Whatever the face amount of the policy, that's what they're going to pay.
Yeah.
So you always get paid the amount you should get.
Do people, when they come over from other types of investments, are they shocked at how maybe, I don't want to say easy, but how smooth maybe the process works, as opposed to maybe what they've been used to, getting up at like midnight, checking their portfolio, things like that? Are they almost surprised at how they don't have to do that?
Well, they realize that when they talk to me. Because I walk them through it, and I say, you know, after you do it, we just sit back, we wait for it to mature. When it matures, we notify you, then you get the check. And like Maloof was posted this week in their accounts. That'll be in their bank account probably Monday morning. We had two Maloofs, and you know, I've talked to people about that. So we've got three policies right now that people are getting paid on, and it's real simple. Once the death certificate goes to the carrier, you know, then it goes to the bank, and once it goes to that carrier, the carrier writes the check, sends it to the bank, and then the bank distributes it. So it's a good way to get paid. You know, it's worked all these years, and you know, that's the way it ought to be. Is where the bank handles the money for us.
And so when the policy matures, they know exactly who gets what, and it's a very, very well mapped out process. Kind of referring...
That's right. The bank's been doing this so long, they just know how to do it, and they do it just, you know, by the numbers. And that's another thing. If people have a question, they can even call the bank direct. You know, they all know us. James Chris, the vice president, is one we deal with. But the president, Klingman, he knows us well. All of us, they know us. They know how we operate. They know the clients. And, you know, it just works. It works like it ought to.
You know, and when you say it like that, it's almost like, you know, people can reach out for any information that they need to at any time. There's not a lot of reason to, because, I mean, it's really just a matter of waiting for the policy to mature, and then you get paid. But if they wanted to, they could at any time. And so that's got to be a big deal to know that there's an actual person with an actual name. You're not calling like a random 800 number someplace and get whoever happens to answer the phone. There's like real people that
this
know you.
This is personal.
Yeah.
This is personal, taking care of persons. And you always talk to a real person. You're not talking to a machine in India. You know, a lot of the companies, when you are talking to someone, you find out they're in India.
Yeah.
You know, you can get anything done with our company. It's easy, whether you're calling me, and lots of times if somebody can't reach somebody else, they'll call me direct. They'll call me on my cell phone, which is fine.
Mm-hmm.
I'll get on it. If they're having trouble with anything, you know, I'm going to get right on it. And another thing, we've got two policies available. We haven't talked about that this morning.
Ooh.
One policy is a lady. She has ovarian cancer, and it's 11 months.
Oh, wow.
It's a really, really short policy. Anybody, they're always talking about short policies. This one is short. And we've still got room if anybody wants to get in this. I think it's going to be a good policy because it's also metastasized to her lungs.
Uh-oh.
So, yes. So not only is it stage four, it is metastasized to her lungs, so they don't give her much hope. 11 months is all it is.
How and you may not have the numbers in front of you, I don't know. How much is the policy? How big is it?
It's $250,000.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's a very small policy. So, you know, two or three people could grab it and get in it. But as I said, it's very short. The premium on it is like 2.4.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So the premium per year is $6,000 on $250,000.
Wow.
So it's not much. It's a good policy. And we've also escrowed that extra 12 months on it. So we've got 23 months escrow.
Wow.
In case it should go over. But it doesn't look like it's going to go over with her health like it is.
Yeah, considering it's 11 months and all the conditions that you talked about. Wow.
And the lady's 51 years old.
Oh, really?
Yes. So she's a young lady, but they don't give her much hope. 11 months. And then we have another one that we've filled one. The guy had two policies. His name's Krasinski. Krasinski is 18 months. And so I think it's a great policy. In fact, the broker said this week, said, I hope he doesn't die before we get this thing filled.
Really?
Well, I do, too. That would be a bad situation.
Oh, wow. It has happened a time or two.
It has, and we know it can happen. And we have to give us back the money, and it goes back in your escrow, and we have to start over. So we hope that this is, you know, going to hold. But that's two good policies for them this week. 18 months Krasinski and 11 month with this lady
Wow.
ovarian cancer. Yes. And her name is Stephanie Kettlewell.
Hmm. Wow. All right. Well, that's really, I mean, it's, you know, when people look at these things and they say, well, when can I get into a policy? And, you know, how fast can I get into a policy? I know you have a lot of new investors that come over and that's like their number one question, right? Is how fast?
That's right. And lots of times, you know, we have to tell them it's 30 days. I remember when we were having trouble getting them, we'd say, well, it's going to be 3 or 4 weeks or a month and a half. And we're saying now, no, you can get in these two policies this week and because we're going to close them out. So I just wanted everybody to know if they have some money and they want a really, really short policy, this would be a good one to invest in either the 11 month or the 18 months or both. You can take a piece of each one.
Would either of these or both or neither, or maybe it's not even a thing. I don't even know. But would policies like these two be a good place for a new investor who's never done this before? Is this a good starting point, do you think?
It'd be a good starting point because they're so short.
Mm. Okay.
You know?
All right.
It'd be okay to start right there and get in a couple of policies, you know, right there.
Do new investors, do you have a particular way that you, like, put them in policies? Do you prefer, like, longer ones or shorter ones? Generally speaking, I know everybody's got a different situation.
Of course, you know, I love the 24 to 28-month ones.
Yeah.
That's my favorite. Now, it's not everybody else's. A lot of people said, oh, I only do short-term. One guy says, well, I've retired now. I have to do short-term. But, you know, I like the 24, 28 a month. I like the profit angle. And it seems like, you know, they just do really well. We have some 30-month ones, and I like them. But for short ones, and, you know, some of these that we just had that are coming into the bank, you know, I think a couple of them was early. The others were not early, but a couple of them were. So it's always good if they come in early. You can reinvest a little sooner, so that's a good thing.
Mm, okay, so we're talking about good profit margins, good return time-wise, and then just kind of keep the process going, and that's That's really how the life settlement is set up. That's how people maximize their their profits, by being in multiple policies for an extended period of time. It's not just get into one and then get out and you're fine. You go about your day.
That's right. You've got to have several to make it work. You've got to be diversified. You've got to have several where it balances. You've got to balance it between the ones that are early and the ones that are late, okay? And you may go along and have several that are late. They may all come in, and then the next group may all be early.
Yeah.
Yeah? So you don't ever know. But we know that it's a safe investment. We know you'll always get your principal and interest back. So it all works out in the end.
And if it does come in late, all this is mapped out ahead of time. People know what the premiums will be, so there's no surprises if anything does, if it comes in 6 months late, you already know ahead of time. And you've already got, those premiums escrowed, so it's not like people have to...
Yes, we've got that extra 12 months escrowed that'll take you through that extra year if you need it.
Yeah.
And then we also try to make sure the premiums are not high. We work on that, and we work on every policy to try to make sure the premiums are low.
Yeah. It's all about keeping that. The whole goal is to have a profit, and if you eat up that profit margin in fees
or premiums, we don't want to do that.
No, exactly. So I mean, you're well aware of how the dynamic works going in, and so you're going to make sure that profit margin is protected, because that's really the whole goal. So people don't even need to worry about it.
That's right. And, your profit is really important to us, and we're trying to always make sure that profit is there and the maximum profit that we can get you. We work on that all the time.
And we'll just mention real quick before we get into trivia, but speaking of that profit margin and having that in mind, when you're bidding on these, because it's a bidding process, when you're bidding on them, if it gets to a point where the bid has to go up and you start to eat into that profit margin, you'll bail. You'll stop
the
bidding.
That's right. We just bail and we say, that's it. They say, Faye, can you come up some more? And I'll say, no, we can't. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So you're protecting all that going in. And so.
Yeah, we've got to. And, we're working on it. And lots of times it'll just get too high. So we give up, let some other guy have it. And explain that. Let them explain that. Let them explain that 6 or 7% premium. I can't explain that.
Oh Lord.
Yeah, we can't explain that. It's too much for us.
Yeah, yeah. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is.
Our phone number is 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And our website, AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
And every Saturday morning around this time, we're going to do trivia. So what is our topic this morning?
It is a famous screenwriter.
Ooh.
Gene Roddenberry. Do you remember him?
Yes.
Okay. He was born in 1921 in El Paso, Texas.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know it. Now, he had an interesting career. His family moved to Los Angeles. His father took the civil service test and became a police commissioner.
Wow.
Okay, commissioner. And so during his childhood, he was reading everything, Pulp Magazine, John Carter of Mars, Tarzan, and all that sort of thing. Now, after high school, he majored in political science at Los Angeles City College. And he was studying aeronautical engineering. And he obtained his pilot license through the U.S. Army Air Corps. He graduated from USAC and commissioned a second lieutenant.
Wow.
Yeah. And so he flew all these combat missions, I believe 68 combat missions.
Really?
Yeah, during World War II. And then he went to work for Pan Am, and he was flying the longest routes that Pan Am has, like to Calcutta, India.
Oh, my.
Things like that. Yeah, and he was involved in a plane crash, and, a lot of people were hurt, he had two broken ribs during that deal, and he dragged injured passengers out of the plane, and a lot of people didn't make it in that. And anyway, he worked for Pan Am until 1948. And then he started his career, of all things, he went to the police department where his dad worked.
Wow.
And he said, well, I'm going to join them. And he did in 1949. And then he spent 16 months working in the traffic division. Then he transferred to the newspaper unit and became public information officer. And, you know, he became a technical advisor for a television version of Mr. District Attorney. And they were letting him do the writing for the show. And he did it under the sign name Robert Wesley.
Really?
Yeah. And he continued to write scripts for Mr. District Attorney and Zivs Highway Patrol. And he sold two stories in 1956. And it was called I Led Three Lives.
Huh.
And he said it was becoming difficult to do all this and to work as a policeman. He resigned, and he was promoted to head writer. He did West Point Story.
Really?
He wrote 10 scripts for them.
Wow.
Yeah, and then he did Hawaii Passage. And then he did Bat Masterson, Jefferson Drum, Have Gun Will Travel. He did lots and lots. But then he had a story he'd written. And you know what it was, Star Trek.
Yes.
And the first MGM wouldn't touch it.
Are you serious?
Yeah, they wouldn't buy it. And he pitched it to them. They liked it, but no, they didn't even make an offer on it. So he went to Desilu Productions, and they offered him a one-script deal. They just hired him and allowed him to work on his own projects. So he took the story to the network and said, look, I've written this. I think it'll be a great movie. they picked it up. And
wow.
The rest is history. He wrote Star Trek. It was only for like three seasons.
Really?
And yeah, but then it came back. And he did, the future ones. He did all the other Star Treks he was involved in and did them. That's what made him famous, was all his Star Trek things. As I said, the first one only lasted 3 years. But then he came back, did the other one, and Nimoy, they talked about him for Mr. Spock. And, of course, he'd worked with him before. And he remembered his thin features, and he said, we've got to have him. So he put the cast together again, and this was in 1964. And they did the Star Trek again, Star Trek of the Future, all these, and that's what made him so famous.
Wow.
Yeah. And so then they did the Star Trek series, and it became very famous, as you know. And at one point, it'd been on the air so long, he was afraid they weren't going to renew. And he went and got all these college kids to have all these riots and demand that Star Trek stay on the air. And he had numerous wives, and he wrote day and night, and it caused a lot of problems. He was taking a lot of drugs, and it didn't do well with his health over the years, I can tell you.
Wow.
Yeah,
I had no idea that any of this was part of his journey. Not a clue.
Oh, yeah. He did all the feature films for Star Trek. It was in first-run syndication. He was the first TV writer with a star on the Hollywood Walk.
Really?
And he was inducted in both the Science Fiction Hall of Fame and the Academy of Television Arts and Sciences Hall of Fame.
Wow.
And he got so far out that They kicked him out, and they said, you can't use our base anymore. You're too far out.
Wow.
Yeah. He was doing a police series called Footbeat. He was trying to get CBS to buy it, they didn't buy it. There were several of his deals nobody bought, but he was very famous. All the Star Trek things, The first one, he said he didn't make a lot of money on, that first one. But then when it went into series, and it was syndicated, and then, you know, when they made it into a cartoon character, he made a lot of money when he got it that far.
You know,
he wrote so many scripts, it's unbelievable.
It is so shocking. It's almost hilarious sometimes when we see something so iconic as Star Trek, and it starts out as, well, this is kind of like a cheap little project. We'll just kind of like go off and do our own thing and see what happens, and they don't expect it to really take off and be a monster. And then some of the biggest, I guess, changes, the biggest maybe iconic things start out that way. It's so amazing.
And when he went to Desilu, they hadn't had a hit in 5 years.
Really?
They had Lucy, but that's all they had at Desilu. Desilu was losing money. They had nothing going. So when he pitched it to them, you know, they decided maybe they'd give it a try because they weren't making money anyway.
Yeah, at that point, what do they have to lose?
Things weren't even working. And so, you know, they went ahead and did it. It became famous, but it didn't last. But then when it came back that second time, it was really a lasting thing because they created a series out of it. They did all the other, and that's when he became wealthy. But the first one didn't make him that much money because it only ran 3 years.
Wow.
Yeah. But then they got busy and you know, did all the other, and got it in syndication. But he wrote so many television shows that I didn't realize, like Bat Masterson, which is one of my favorite all-time ones.
Yeah.
I mean, I love it. I still go back and watch the old reruns of that one. And
it's almost funny how he was working like an actual like day job and then doing this on the side, and it just took over, and he's like, I don't have time to do this. I got to quit my day job.
That's right. But I couldn't believe he started out as a policeman.
Yeah, I know.
You know,
it's so, you wouldn't expect something like that. You know, the guy that, you know, creates all these wonderful shows, you would never, you'd think that, you know, he has, you know, some big long history and his dad was in Hollywood and, you know, all these things would have happened, but just to kind of come out of left field and kind of take a sort of a weird left turn for what he thought was going to be his career and end up with a monster like this, it's amazing.
Yeah, and his company even set up to sell all the merchandise for Star Trek.
Jeez.
And that was a huge deal, setting that up. You know, I mean, everybody should have thought of that.
Yeah.
You know.
Man.
I mean, Star Trek, who would have thought he was so smart, you know, and came up with Star Trek. And then, you know, at one time, you know, the production company was deep in debt.
Wow.
And did you know, the last episode of Star Trek aired 47 days before Neil Armstrong stepped onto the moon?
Really? I didn't know that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and his ashes were actually taken up into space, by the way.
Really?
Yeah.
Did they release them, or did they bring them back down?
No, they released them.
Wow. I didn't know that.
And everybody felt like he was typecast because he'd been, you know, done all the Star Trek and all of that, and that they thought, well, he can't go and do, you know, a different kind. But he did. He did a lot of stuff with Rock Hudson, Angie Dickinson. Do you remember the movie Pretty Maids All in a Row?
Vaguely.
Yeah, he wrote and produced that.
Really?
Yeah.
It's really it's difficult to have, you know, such an iconic series like that, and then because a lot of times you're right, you do get typecast, and it's like, well, that's all they can do. But man, such a variety of different things.
Yeah, and then in 72 and 73, he made another comeback, again, to science fiction, because that was really his thing. And he had four new series, and it's called Roddenberry's Genius 2.
Really?
Yeah, and so he thought he could recreate the success of Star Trek. He created a 45-page writing guide, did all this other, but it was never like it was before. And then he produced four other scripts, like Planet of the Apes and, you know, all these others. But Planet of the Apes was canceled after 14 episodes.
Was it really?
Uh-huh.
Oh. I didn't realize that.
But it's just amazing how many things he wrote that we never knew were his productions, you know?
I know.
And he's from El Paso, Texas.
Yay.
And his dad was just a policeman. You know,
and you glossed over this, and I was going to stop you then because I'm like, wait a minute, what? He was actually in a plane crash, had two broke ribs, and still managed to pull people from.
Oh yeah,
the wreckage.
And that was his second plane crash. When he was in the Air Force, he was in a bad air crash, and he became an inspector for him after the plane crash.
What?
They hired him to inspect. Accidents and crashes. But, the one on Pan Am was a really bad one. And, but he got, I think, a Purple Heart while he was in the Air Force.
Really?
On one of his crashes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so apparently he was a pretty good pilot. And then he got most of the people to safety on that Pan Am flight. So he was a very talented man. I can't even imagine. At one moment you're a policeman, and the next moment you're riding Star Trek.
Yeah.
So he had a tremendous imagination.
Clearly.
There's no doubt about it.
Wow.
And like he said, the first one, he didn't make a lot of money on. But when he got the others, the animated, when he got the series, when he did the series, that's when he really made money.
Wow. And to think that it all just kind of started because he just was writing these little local scripts. It just...
Yes, writing Batman and all this. And he storied to him. He told him that Nemo was the only one going to come back to the cast. And Nemo found out and demanded that the others be in the show also. So they had to bring back the original cast.
Wow.
Because Nemo said he wasn't going to act in if they didn't bring them all back.
Wow. That's really cool. I mean, to have that kind of,
Nemo had that kind of pull. Because they knew how good he was in the series. And so when they brought him back and he found out the others weren't being asked back, he required it as part of the contract or he wasn't going to do it.
Yeah. I mean, and that's pretty upstanding, too, on his part to make sure that, you know, because a lot of times, you know, when people, you know, sometimes think, you know, OK, I'm the big star of this, but there's a whole network of other people. And without that chemistry and without the other people that made it work, a lot of times it doesn't fly the second go around. So that was really cool.
It doesn't even work. Yeah, I thought it was cool. So all the Star Trek people, it was from El Paso, Texas. Gene Roddenberry was famous and was such a great writer. I thought it was funny when the Marines kicked him off the base because, you know, he was going so far out. I mean, he was far out. They said, that's just too far out for us. You're gone.
Wow. Can't handle it anymore.
No, they couldn't handle his wild things he was going to put in a movie. They just said, no, that's going too far.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
jeez.
But I think it's because he had such this vision, you know, like the Star Trek series. He was trying, I think he was putting a little of that in some of these other movies.
Yeah.
And I just said, you know, that's going too far. We don't want any of that.
We don't want any of that.
And he was married five times.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well,
yeah,
six if you include being married to his work, clearly.
That's exactly right. And he did one in London. They hired him to come to London and do a series. He did that also.
Wow.
It was kind of like Dr. Holmes and Holmes and Watson.
Oh.
And and it was called Spectre.
Really?
Yeah, Spectre. He did that in England.
Huh.
And you know, they paid him a lot of money. I don't think money had anything to do with him. I don't think he cared, you know, much about that.
Hmm. You know, I guess that's the mark of a true creative person is that, you know, not only you don't do it for the money, but you do it for the creative project. But then to be able to do so many different things and not, you know, so many, I guess, different types of things, as opposed to just, you know, doing the same thing over and over and over and over using the same chemistry that works. It's really quite fascinating how many different things that he could do. Not many people can do that.
That's right. And to keep Star Trek going all that time,
yeah,
you know, with a new idea every time.
Yeah.
You know, when it got into series.
Yeah. It's tough to keep some of that fresh, you know.
Yeah, to keep it going that long. And then it went into animation. Of course, then the smart thing he did was getting all the toys, all that, under his company name.
Yeah. Man, merchandising is huge business.
It is. And you wouldn't have thought he would have realized that because he was a writer.
Yeah.
You know, he was a writer and a producer. And he was very creative. I mean, when you think to all the things he did, Star Trek was genius.
Yeah. Boy, Gene Roddenberry did a whole lot more than what I ever thought. That's for sure.
Yeah. A lot of people didn't realize what all he really did, how famous he really was as a writer.
Yeah. I didn't even know he was from El Paso either.
Yeah. El Paso, Texas.
Neat.
He also did Dragnet.
Oh.
Yeah, he did Dragnet, and that was one of my favorites, too.
Oh, I know it.
Yeah, and I realized he did that. And there was another guy on the set on Dragnet that's also from Texas. And I can't recall his name right this minute, but he played opposite Friday, and he was from Texas also.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yes. Yeah, I'll look it up and tell you who it was. But it wasn't somebody that had a big name. It wasn't a big name character.
Wow. How cool.
I just realized he was. Yeah. So that was my cool producer story.
I love the cool producer story. This is Your Money with Fay Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
And real quick, right before trivia, we started talking about how life settlements are mapped out so that if things happen, if a policy goes over and people would have to pay, premiums, they're going to know exactly what those premiums are going in. We should mention that is the biggest risk because there are risks involved with a life settlement type of investment. And that's the biggest risk of the three big ones, right?
That is the biggest risk is it can go over. You must be accredited to do this, and that's one of the reasons that the government requires you to be accredited is if it went over that you could stand it if it went over. So a lot of people say, why do you have to be accredited? That's exactly why, because if it goes over, you have to be able to stand it going over. So that's your biggest risk in this investment. If it goes over, you have to be able to pay the premiums and stand the delay, because it may be a year, 2 years, whatever. On our newer policies, I would say 2 years would be a stretch. The old policies might be longer. So that is your first risk. The second risk is it's not liquid during that time. If you've made an investment, you know, of course, it's not liquid because you're in that policy. You're one of the owners of that policy. If it's a $1 million policy, you've got $100,000 in it. You own part of that policy. So that's how that works. The third risk is if a life insurance company should ever go under. We haven't had one go under in years and years because they're worth billions and billions. And right now they're playing musical chairs. Different companies are buying different companies right now.
Really?
I mean, there's a lot of companies changing hands. People are buying them. And, they've got the $1 billion to buy them.
It's such a big business.
It is. And your premium income is what sustains them. They've got millions and millions of dollars in premium income.
Wow.
All right.
And real quick, I know you mentioned that you have to be accredited to do a life settlement. What exactly does that mean again?
You have to make either $200,000 a year or you must be worth $1 million without your house.
Okay.
And sometimes people say, Faye, I don't know if I'm accredited. Okay. To be accredited, you've got to look, if you're going the $1 million route, you look at your business, your savings, your checking, your IRA, your 401k. If you're a rancher or a farmer, You look at your cattle, your horses, things that are worth a lot of money. So that's what you do. You just add everything up and see what you've got, okay?
And a lot of times people don't realize that they're accredited, and they actually are. Once they start, you know, bringing everything in, sometimes they'll forget about things, and then all of a sudden sometimes people are surprised they didn't think they were, and then they start, you know, really adding things up, and it's like, oh, my goodness, I'm more than accredited. So,
they find the people 2 years ago, they lived in Big Spring. They came over, they weren't sure. They called me back. They said, yeah, we're worth $1.5 million. And they were worried about being worth $1 million.
Yeah, yeah. So it's there a lot of times. It is worth looking into. So to get started, people do need to call and make an appointment to come talk to you. And you've got availability this coming week, yes?
I will be in Midland this week.
Oh, yay.
I will be physically in Midland.
All right.
I will be making appointments with new people, old people, clients, whatever. Yes.
Excellent.
You know how they can tell if I'm in town. You know this, don't you? Do you know the story?
They drive by?
They drive by. If they see my car there, they just come in. That's just the way it is. They'll just say, I'm going to run by and see Faye. Oh, yeah, there's your car. And they'll run in and say hello.
People should make an appointment, though. So one last time, what is your phone number?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website, AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
You've been listening to Your Money with Faye Bagby, sound advice to help your money grow. Listen for Your Money with Faye Bagby every Saturday morning at 10 here on 97 Gold.
This program has been a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and has been brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.